Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
An Erio's original.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame? They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing the Lizzie Borden murders. Here's what you need to know. In 1892, Fall River, Massachusetts was a cotton boom town populated by the wealthy textile mill owners and the poor Irish and French Canadian immigrant workers. 32-year-old Lizzie Borden was among the wealthy in town. Lizzie's father, Andrew Borden, was an eighth-generation high-society man, owning substantial property and employed as the president of a major bank in Fall River. He and Lizzie's mother, Sarah Morse, were married until her death when Lizzie was only 2 years old. Andrew remarried Abby Gray 2 years later. Lizzie was active in the Fall River community. She was a member of the Christian Endeavor Society and the Ladies' Fruit and Flower Mission, as well as a Sunday school teacher and member of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. A novelist named Victoria Lincoln, who lived up the street from her in childhood, described her as, quote, tall, stocky, jowly, dressy, and unremarkable. On the very hot morning of August 4th, 1892, the family woke for breakfast. Andrew's brother-in-law, John Morse, was in town for a visit and headed into town around 9 a.m. to make some purchases. Andrew headed out for work while Abby went to the second floor to clean. When Andrew came home, he struggled with the front door lock before entering and resting in the sitting room. Bridget Sullivan, the family's Irish immigrant servant, washed the windows before taking a nap in her third floor bedroom. She was awoken by Lizzie shouting, "Father's dead! Go for the doctor!" Bridget entered the sitting room to find Andrew slumped over the couch, dripping with blood from at least 10 stab wounds. The women rushed to call the doctor, and Lizzie informed Bridget Abby had left to visit a friend who was ill. Bridget, certain Abby hadn't left, approached the second floor bedroom, only to find Abby, soaked in blood, dead from 17 blows to the head. To this day, the gruesome murders live on in the form of a popular, terrifying nursery rhyme. Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, gave her mother 41. Fun facts, aka death stats. Andrew Borden, 70 years old, was discovered in a pool of blood on the living room couch, his face nearly split in two and still dripping with blood. Abby Borden, 63 years old, was found in the second floor bedroom. Because she was found with dark coagulated blood on her injuries, it was believed she was killed possibly an hour and a half before her husband. With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello, Alarmy.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And it's just the three of us today.
Spooky.
Three of us.
Oh my God, wait, did something happen to our guest? Is that why it's only three of us?
Yes, what happened was I had asked a ghost to be our guest because it's, you know, we're getting close to Halloween.
Right,
and,
right.
You know,
yes.
I thought
so they must
be
pretty busy if it's close to Halloween.
And that's what happened.
They were, right.
They were double booked.
Shoot. The ghost ghosted you?
Yeah. I mean, it's not that he's not here or that he is here, but we can't see him.
I think a ghost, they human us, right?
Wait, what?
Because if a human ghosts someone, doesn't a ghost human someone?
Oh, yes, I see what you're saying. Well, to human would be to do the opposite of what ghosting is, which is to be there.
To be present.
So
right.
I would say a ghost who is always there for another ghost is humaning that ghost.
Right,
yes.
Right.
But,
okay.
But there's no ghost ghosting us or humaning us today.
No.
They were simply double booked.
Look, in all fairness, it's like trying to make an appointment with Santa Claus on Christmas.
Exactly.
But
since we don't,
I just used another holiday. It was a very.
It's
no,
like
I got it.
It's
I
like
got it.
Trying to have a conversation with a turkey around Thanksgiving.
Right. It's very difficult.
Exactly. it's like trying to get a hold of a firework during New Year's Eve.
Right.
You know.
Right. It's like trying to ride a unicorn during gay pride. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. They're all occupied.
So since we don't have a guest today, I was thinking we could ask ourselves, what is something that's just, you know, a short thing, three sentences. What's keeping us up at night? What's alarming us?
I'll tell you something that doesn't alarm me, but gives me anxiety, which is what that's about too. When somebody says in three sentences.
Okay.
And I'm not just saying that because you just said it right now, but it happened to me the other day when I was sort of on my way of leaving a social function that we were all at, by the way, but I stayed later than you guys. And one of our friends came up to me and he was like, so how are you doing, Chris? And I was like, because I had said I was leaving. And he was like, give me a three sentence. How are you doing? And oof. I'm a very literal person. So I'll be like, oh shit, like where do the sentences end? And like, what if
gotta pick the best three sentences?
What if it's a run-on sentence?
You follow direction.
Okay. What about you, Clayton? Is there something that's alarming you?
God.
I mean, if you have to think about it, okay, so I'll go.
Yeah, you go.
And maybe this will spark something. I read an LA Times article that came out recently that said that climate change heat waves are one of the biggest serial killers, and they go underdocumented, and that's in California.
Well, we talked about that when
we
covered the European heat wave.
Exactly.
Is that they're really hard. They're not just like, okay, here's a hurricane. We all know what a hurricane is. They all have different categories. They get names. Mm-hmm. Hurricanes get names.
And one of the things that happens is obviously this affects the elderly and mostly, but they'll be, you know, working outside and then just go into their home. And if they don't have air conditioning, they overheat and die of heart attacks usually. So
that
it's really sad. but you can see how that would go unchecked or uncounted there,
sort of flies
as a heat wave. Right. You know, it's like, oh, technically it's cardiac arrest, right?
Right.
But
induced by.
Right, exactly.
There has been talk of starting to name the heat waves to make people like take them more seriously. I read that recently in I think a Times article being like, we should start naming these heat waves so that it has the same gravitas as like a hurricane and we should take it more seriously. What's been bothering me, and you bringing up things like elderly and overlooked.
okay.
Oh boy.
And I also just had a physical sensation. I have a pinched nerve in my right foot.
Oh no.
And it's because it's just literally because I'm getting older, and I tried to do an exercise, and my body was like, nah, you can't do that. You're broken now. Just one. Like, I just, yeah, pinched nerve.
Where
in my right
are
foot.
You? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'll be all right. You know, like, it's only going to get worse, right?
Theoretically, we'll be all right. But I don't know if your workouts will be the same ever again.
Yeah, my walking might suffer long term, but I'm alive. Gosh.
Okay, well, I mean, with, you know, how can I transition here? This is what's the perfect...
What's the nerve in your back?
Yeah, no.
Pinching sharp pain?
I'll tell you
sharp
who
pain?
Got...
Sharp pain? Sharp objects?
Sharp objects in the back of your head.
Right.
These poor victims Lizzie Borden.
I'd like to take an axe to my stupid pinched nerve.
Okay. I don't think that would help your situation.
I don't think that would help.
Right. Okay.
Unless you're using the butt of the axe to kind of
massage it. Sure. Yeah.
I guess.
Let's do that.
But that would be dangerous, and I would advise against that.
Yeah. So this is according to American Heritage. This is what, you know, happened moments when the bodies were found. Bridget, as you remember, was the servant, finished her windows and climbed the back stairs to her attic room to rest at about 11. This is 11 in the morning. The house was hot and silent. Within minutes, Bridget recalled she was awakened by Lizzie calling, quote, come down quick. Father's dead. Somebody come down. Somebody came and killed him. Little was left of Andrew's face. Half an eye hung from its socket. Doctors testified that a single axe blow had killed him. Nine others had been gratuitous. Shortly after the police arrived, Bridget and a neighbor ventured upstairs for a sheet to cover the hideous sight, and they were found there. They found Abby. Her plump body lay face down in a pool of blood, her head and neck a bloody mess. Those first on the scene noted that Lizzie remained remarkably calm throughout the ordeal. While one woman claimed that there were tears in her eyes, several others testified that Lizzie's eyes were dry and her hands steady.
Ooh.
What a murder.
What a murder. Grizzly. Grizzly is something that people use to describe something like that.
Yep. I think I already used it, so.
Perfect. So, the first thing that I thought of was a detective might look at that and say that because of the gratuitous violence, that there was a personal connection.
Mm.
I feel like I've seen enough Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, that it wasn't just a planned thing, that it was personal building up passionate murder.
Sure.
So that's where my mind's at. What about you, Rebecca or Clayton?
I'm thinking, I mean, it's 1892, right? It's 1892. So these are very different times.
Yes.
It's like a thousand years ago.
It's 1,000 years ago. And what people were used to living with and experiencing day to day, very different from today. So
it's true.
My first thing is, like, it sounds disgusting. And, like, you know, if I were to walk into that scene, I would be very traumatized. It'd be very hard for me to, like, look at and get out of my mind. But
you know, they have pictures online.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I mean, I guess it was just as terrifying then, right? But, like, were they somehow, like, Lizzie in shock? So that's why she's calm? Or because she was so...
That's a great question. I think we're going to have to discuss when we put her up on the board. But first, before we put her up on the board, let's put up some of the ones that were speculated early on, right? So there was a foreigner.
Just a foreigner. Any old foreigner will do.
Yes. Not one from this town. Not one from here. Just anyone who looks different or sounds different or comes from a place that's not here.
This sounds, sounds like America.
Okay. Smithsonian Magazine says, the police initially considered the murders a male crime, probably committed by a, quote, foreigner. Within a few hours of the murders, police arrested their first suspect, an innocent Portuguese immigrant. American Heritage says, every door to the house had been locked and double locked, making it unlikely that anyone familiar with the home could have gotten in without being seen.
Unfamiliar with the home.
Oh, sorry. Unfamiliar. The absence of probable suspects encouraged frantic speculation. Rumors circulated about a tenant who had a grudge against Mr. Borden, about a Portuguese farm laborer who had once been employed by the Bordens in nearby Swansea, about a poorly dressed man hurrying down the street on the morning of the murders, carrying what appeared to be a hatchet wrapped in newspaper. So this was what was circling around town.
So, wait, if all the doors were locked, why? They just said family probably didn't do it. People inside were unlikely. Why did they? Why was there frantic speculation? Sorry, I'm a little confused here.
So when the reason the doors were locked was, or the reason they're talking about this was, there was a guest that had left the house, and when he returned, he went to open the door, use the key that he had been given, and it was locked. He went round to the back, and it was also locked. And so he started banging on the door, and that's when the servant, which is Bridget, went around, and then they shortly after that discovered the bodies.
Okay. I still am confused as to why they blamed a foreigner.
Yeah, well, exactly. Now, the other person they blamed was the servant who was inside the house, Bridget Sullivan. This is according to Kara Robertson, author. She says, once it became clear that a fair amount of time had elapsed between the two deaths, it became unlikely that the killer was an outsider. It was a small house and there weren't very many places to hide. This is NPR. They said the servant, who was Irish, the first strike against her in the New England town and its waspy anti-immigrant sentiments, and whom the family called by their last servant's name, Maggie.
Oh, that's hilarious.
They don't even call her name.
No, they just they're like, our old one was Maggie, so can you just be Maggie too?
We're not going to learn a new name.
As they couldn't be bothered to remember the name Bridget, apparently, was the natural suspect for the police at first. But once they'd ruled her out, they closed their net around Lizzie.
So this is more of sort of a chronological kind of piecing together as the police did of the time. So we'll just put it up on the board just like the police did.
Yeah.
Wait, what did we put? What exactly are we putting up?
The foreigner and then Bridget. AKA Maggie. The idea that you can't even learn somebody's new name is absurd to me.
Unreal.
So I mean, they're monsters. They're already guilty by just by that alone.
I mean, these were interesting people. And let's discuss now Lizzie Borden. We got to put her up on the list. Mm-hmm. We will not make this mistake ever again.
The Jack Torrance mistake we just made by not putting Jack Torrance on the board.
Okay, no. We've learned our lesson time and time again. So bear with me and we'll stop here and there because this is kind of long. This is according to an American Heritage article I read. It's very long, very interesting if you're interested. At the inquest early the following week, Lizzie was unable to maintain a consistent story about her activities on the morning of the murders. Pressed on her whereabouts at the time of her father's death, Lizzie first claimed she was in the barn loft seeking iron to make sinkers for a fishing expedition. Then that she was up in the loft eating pears. The closed barn loft would have been so insufferably hot that day that few would have visited it voluntarily, much less lingered to eat pears. Furthermore, an officer who claimed that to have been the first to examine the loft after the crimes testified that the dust in the on the floor was undisturbed by footprints or trailing skirts.
Hmm.
So quickly, you know, her, you know, alibi or wherever mm-hmm. she said she was
questionable.
Deemed, yeah, very questionable.
Yeah.
Okay. And they go on. By Saturday, the day of the funerals, the police felt that they had little choice but to arrest Lizzie. She alone, they felt, had had the opportunity to commit the murders. They found it hard to believe that anyone could have passed through the house unseen by Lizzie, who claimed to have been on the first floor while Abby was being murdered above. It also strained credibility to assert, as Lizzie did, that Abby's 210-pound body had crashed to the floor without a sound. Furthermore, I know.
I just picture Lizzie. I mean, it's definitely her. Like, it's,
I mean, there's a literal axe murder happening in the room next door. See, and she's I didn't hear it.
I just picture her saying, like, I didn't see anyone. I was busy murdering people. So I didn't see people because I had the bloodshot eyes and of a murderer while I was murdering someone.
Okay, so furthermore, despite a reward offered by the Borden sisters, no sender of the note that Lizzie claimed had called Abby to town could be found. Okay, let me explain this. So when the so what happened was that when her dad, okay, so Abby, her stepmother, was mm-hmm. murdered, right? Mm-hmm. The dad returns mm-hmm. and we'll get to this in a little bit. He returns home possibly because it's so hot mm-hmm. a little earlier than expected from his job. He asks Lizzie, where is Abby? And she says, oh, I don't know, someone sent a note and she went to go visit a sick friend.
Mm-hmm. I see. So she's being shady about where the whereabouts of Abby.
Yeah, presumably because she's already dead upstairs.
Right.
So, but and they
couldn't find the note.
They couldn't find this note.
Okay.
Well, and we do know that from the records that he was killed like about an hour and a half after Abby was killed, right?
Yes. Mm. Yes.
So she's okay. definitely already upstairs in that bedroom dead and bleeding.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. Wow. Back to the American Heritage article. In Lizzie's favor was the fact that she had been neat and clean when first seen after the murders. The police were certain that the murderer would have been covered with blood. Medical experts would later examine the trajectories of the spurting blood and argue otherwise, but belief in blood-drenched killer persisted. Mm. Though puzzled by Lizzie's cleanliness, police were certain that they had found the murder weapon, lying in a box of dusty tools stored high in a chimney jog in the basement, was a hatchet head. It was neither rusty nor old, though it had been freshly rubbed in ashes, perhaps to make it appear so. Moreover, its wooden handle, from which blood would have been difficult to remove, had been broken off near the head. So presumably she took it off.
Covered it in ashes and sort of tucked it in this jog, whatever that is.
So during the trial, a new piece of evidence came about, damaging to Lizzie's cause. She had turned over to the police a spotlessly clean, fancy blue Bengaline dress that she swore she had worn on the day of the murders. Women in New England were surprised. No one wore party dresses of Bengaline, a partly woolen fabric, around the house in August heat.
Hmm.
While witnesses swore that Lizzie was indeed wearing blue that day, none could swear that this dress was the one that they had seen. To confound the problem, Alice Russell reluctantly admitted that she had seen Lizzie burn a blue cotton dress in the kitchen stove 3 days after the murders. The dress was soiled, she said, Lizzie had told her, with brown paint. A color noted.
Now.
A color noted, the prosecutor, not unlike that of dried blood.
Correct.
Okay.
So, a lot of circumstantial evidence. It's all circumstantial.
If I'm in the jury right now, though, I'm not feeling too good about Lizzie. Just like based on these facts alone, you know, it's like we gotta sit through the whole trial. We're gonna hear all the information.
Yeah.
But this is not helpful information.
I mean, it would have been interesting if you had been in the jury, because do you guys know what happened? Spoiler alert. This, you know, goes to trial. They have it's an all male jury.
So I could have been on the jury because I'm a white man.
Yes, a white man.
You Chris and I could just.
Although I'm Italian. Chris and Clayton. Italians are technically foreigners.
Yeah, you're an immigrant. Maybe at that time, yeah. At that time, maybe you wouldn't have been on the jury, but Clayton for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pilgrim through and through.
It took them supposedly an hour, but they say technically it really was just 10 minutes, and then they just talked about other things to make it seem like they were thinking
wasn't
about
a
it
rash
more.
Decision.
Yeah. And she was found not guilty.
Crazy.
Yes. And we'll get into that, but okay. You know, this is where we're going.
A couple of things popped into my mind, ideas for putting up on the board. You might get to this later, but the heat of August.
No, I don't have that. Let's put that up.
So right. I would just, you know, that's always a contributing factor. Plus, we were just talking about heat waves, and mm-hmm. we were just hard on heat waves. So mm-hmm. put that up on the board. And then also, we got to put the fashion industry up there. Not only A, because of her.
Yep.
A, because they are aren't they a cotton mill producing, or they're a...
The
town produces a textile mill owner.
Yes, textiles. So
textiles. It's a cotton.
Their dad was a banker.
Yes. Okay. But the town Fall River.
Okay.
Was populated by wealthy textile mill owners. Mm-hmm. So textiles all around. Plus, you got the fashion of the day of her blue dress giving away the fact that, she might have done it.
Yes. Well, this is our. You're hinting, or you're saying exactly what our listener suggestion is. Oh. And they also put the fashion industry up, but right. for a different reason.
Oh.
This is coming from @MaryMaricat. And they say the fashion industry, clothes and corsets were so uncomfortable, it made her crabby enough to murder.
She's just crabby from a corset, so she hacks her father 10 times with an axe. That's really crabby. That's very crabby. It's like,
day after day, this
but
corset.
You know what? You're two guys. You'll never understand. You know, this is where, this is where Amanda would attest to it, because she's always wanted to do Who's to Blame for the Corset. That's mm-hmm. always been her pitch. You can't breathe. You can't breathe in those things.
I buy it. I mean, there are furniture. Isn't there a furniture piece called like a fainting couch, which is what women used to lay on after they took their corsets off because they would be so constricted by the corsets? Like, isn't that something?
I think you're right. I think you mm-hmm. have to look that up into that. Because I think you are right.
It's just like a chaise lounge, I think.
Yeah.
We just turned fainting couches into a chaise lounge, and now it's a popular decor thing.
It's just like where you pass out every day after you take your corset off. Like, that's not sustainable.
No.
Let's talk about family inheritance.
Hmm.
So this was a point of contention within the family. This is, again, the American Heritage article. Emma is her sister. While Emma tolerated her stepmother, Lizzie openly disliked her. Ill feelings increased in 1887 when Andrew gave Abby a house for the use of her sister. Remember, Abby's the stepmom. So there's already a lot of tension between Lizzie and the stepmom. So seeking peace, Andrew then gives his daughters a house of greater value to rent out. But they are not placated. A dressmaker later remembered making the mistake of referring to Abby as Lizzie's, quote, mother, causing Lizzie to snap, saying, "Don't call her that to me. She is a mean thing and we hate her." And from the record, from what I remember also reading, when the dad gave Lizzie and Emma, the sister, the house, they were so upset because they knew what he was doing, right? He was just placating them, that they sold it right back to him for money. Okay, so this is according to Jules Reichebusch, professor. And they said it was money. The motive was money, but that wasn't planned. And Lizzie did hate her stepmother. All this evidence seemed to point to Lizzie, but the only motive anyone could come up with was simply greed. Upon the deaths of her father and stepmother, Lizzie and Emma would come into a sizable inheritance.
Dad was a bit of a penny pincher, right?
He was a bit of an Ebenezer, and Lizzie
liked the finer things. She wanted to like travel and wear nice things, and I guess they fought a lot about the fact that he was like, no, we're not wasting that money, even though he was like a bank manager and rolling in it, I guess.
Okay, so get daddy small bucks up there.
Daddy small bucks.
And get...
He is also the victim, so... Right. So let's...
Yeah, let's blame the dead guy.
Let's just, you know...
Playing real fast maybe, and loose here.
No, maybe we don't put daddy small bucks. Maybe we just put like... you know, like penny pinching Ebenezer, like
dad's penny pinching ways.
Sure.
okay. And let's talk about the father. So let's talk about this. Andrew Borden began his business career as an undertaker. It was rumored that he had cut the feet off corpses to make them fit into undersized coffins. But however ill-gotten his initial profits, Borden invested them wisely. By 1892, he was worth nearly $500,000, served as a director of several banks and as a board member of 3 woolen mills, and had built the imposing A.J. Borden building on Main Street as a testimony to his business acumen. To keep his fortunes increasing, Borden foreclosed, undercut, overcharged, and hoarded without flinching. Borden's first wife, Sarah, had died in 1862 after bearing him 3 daughters. Only 2 of them survived past infancy. 2 years later, he married Abby Gray, a 38-year-old spinster. Nothing suggests that Abby was anything but kind to the 2 little girls whose stepmother she became, but they never returned her affection. After her marriage, Abby became a compulsive eater. Only a little over 5 feet tall, by 1892 she weighed more than 200 pounds. Okay, American Heritage, calm down.
Don't need to body shame.
Yeah, seriously. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of tension. It looks like he did penny pinch. This is now according to biography.com. Despite Andrew's financial success, the family lived a frugal lifestyle. Their home lacked electricity and indoor plumbing. And Lizzie, who was fond of fine clothes and longed to travel, frequently chafed against her father's penny pinching, noting that a number of Borden relatives lived in the more socially prominent Fall River neighborhood known as The Hill. The wealthy Borden was not a popular man, and he had personal and professional disputes with a number of people, any of whom Lizzie later claimed could have had a motive to kill him. Rolling Stone said, there have been many theories regarding Lizzie's potential motives, including that she was the victim of incest at the hand of her father, or was angry with him for killing her pet pigeons, or simply sick of his strict and rigid ways, ready to inherit his wealth and stop living under his thumb. None can be proven, but that all adds to the mystique.
What's interesting, too, is that you find out that after this all happens and she's acquitted, is that they do sell the house and they buy a house up on the hill.
Yes. She and her sister do.
Which is like what they want to do all along. So, it's like, you're like, that doesn't look too, that's not a smart move.
What was preventing them from doing that earlier? Because I was about to say we could blame sort of American patriarchy, because a woman like Lizzie, who's, say, she's unmarried, right?
Right.
She's 32. She's still living with her dad. There's obviously roommate tensions there.
Right.
Because I was like, this made me think of somebody who's living in their parents' basement and complaining about, like, the snacks or something. It's like, you know, go off and you're an adult and go off and make your own things. But I think at the time it wasn't sort of socially acceptable for her to do that. So I would sort of blame
the patriarchy.
Let's put that up, because I had called it, I mean, maybe we could stay the patriarchy or female perceptions of the time, you know, at the time.
Right.
But let's call it the patriarchy.
By the way, he used to cut the feet off of people to fit them into a smaller coffin. Can you imagine getting to heaven? St. Peter, you spent your whole life, you're a good person, you get to heaven, St. Peter opens the gate, you take a step and trip because you don't have your feet, because the guy who put you in a coffin at the very end of your life cut your feet off. And you got to go through your whole afterlife. Like, if the afterlife exists.
But are you saying that afterlife, you're going to be, however you end, I think you're going to continue your, you sustain in your afterlife?
If it's a Halloween movie, yes.
I just, think that would be a funny idea of somebody who gets into heaven, but they can't walk or run because the guy
took their feet.
Took their feet. I don't know.
You know, I'm working on a bunch of spinoffs for this podcast that are somewhere more.
No Feet. It's called. Is your podcast called No Feet?
I think it would be called
No Feet in Heaven.
Wheeling Around the Clouds or something like that, because you'd give the guy a wheelchair, obviously, right? Okay. God would provide a wheelchair. Sure.
Well, you know, patriarchy. Anyway, this again is American Heritage, and it's. Popular theories about women's physiological and psychological makeup took a new importance to followers of the Borden case. After detailed anatomical analysis, scientists confidently declared that the women of their era differed little from their prehistoric sisters. They spoke with assurance of women's arrested evolution. The fault, they agreed, laid in her reproductive capacity, which sapped vital powers that in men contributed to ever-improving physique and intellect. Okay, buddy. The defects of the female anatomy included slopping shoulders, broad hips, underdeveloped muscles, short arms and legs, and poor coordination. To those who believed Lizzie innocent, evidence was abundant that no short-armed, uncoordinated weakling of a woman could swing an axe with enough force to crash through hair and bone almost 24 times. For the record, the media and the people of the town at the time didn't think that Lizzie was capable of murder merely because she was a woman.
Right. She's too weak and feeble to be able to hold an axe and swing it that many times.
What are you laughing at,
Chris? God, dude, people are so funny.
Terrible.
That's rooted in like our, again, that's like a sexism where it's like women, it's like this weak sex and there's no way they could be so monstrous. It's, you know, that's a man's work.
Yeah, exactly. Spinsters like Lizzie, she's 32 years old, were, as one author charitably put it, quote, deplorable accidents. Okay.
Jeez.
Wow. But they were not wholly useless. The nation...
God.
This is crazy. Okay, the nation's old
maids.
Can you
imagine being a woman at this time?
No, I can't. Thank God. I'm not. No. The nation's old maids were urged to devote themselves to Christian charities and to teaching, a reproductive calling. They called it a reproductive calling. Lizzie's devotion to good works and the church followed this prescription precisely. Compelling, indeed, was the image of this pious daughter serving steaming bowls of soup to indigent newsboys and diligently trying to bring the gospel to heathens of Fall River. Several authors manfully chuckled over woman's inability to plan and think things through. Clearly, the murderer of the Bordens had planned things quite well. Not only had he managed to murder two people and elude the police, but he had shown remarkable tenacity by hiding for more than an hour after murdering Abby in order to do the same to Andrew.
So is that like sexist oppression that's like contributing to her murderous rage? What do you call that?
Yeah, I guess we'd call that misconceptions of women. Like, you know, 1890s misconceptions of or underestimating women. I think that's what that is.
I think it's holding them down too. It's very skillfully done.
Mm-hmm. Right, you know? It's oppression for sure.
It's oppression,
of course. Yeah. But yeah, it's sort of rooted in this sort of widely held wrong belief that they they are weaker. So to me, what's wrong there and what's to blame is the belief itself. It's the misconception.
I don't know. I think maybe I'm more
I guess the question is whether that misconception or whatever is intentional, whether they're
I mean, it must be nice to, it must have been nice to be a guy, you know, at that time, and they're like, we don't want this to change. No.
And for Lizzie, it kind of speaks to her brilliance to be like, I could get away with this because no one's going to think a lady would ever do something like this.
Right.
Right. They think so little of us. So, yeah, you can call that oppression. And
of women.
Underestimation.
Female oppression.
Yeah, yeah. And something you said before, Chris, perhaps you can put up living with your parents too long. You were talking about the...
The roommate tension.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, well, you keep going, but okay. I have some thoughts about that.
Okay. Even the house Lizzie lived, this is American Heritage again. Even the house Lizzie lived in vexed her. Its Grant era furnishings contrasted sharply with her stylish clothes. There was no bath, no electricity. Those such, like we said, they were common elsewhere in town. Besides the water closet in the basement stood a pile of old newspapers for sanitary purposes. No interior space was wasted on hallways. Rooms simply opened into one another, making it very difficult for anyone to pass through unnoticed. Lizzie longed to live in the on the hill, Fall River's most elegant neighborhood and the symbol of social prominence she craved. While her father's wealth entitled her to live there, Andrew insisted on living on De Classe 2nd Street. I don't know what seems like a French word, déclassé, but it can't be
it's not a good word. Nice descriptor.
Yeah.
It's having fallen in social status, so it's low social status.
Oh, low.
The second street is a shitty street.
Okay. So, I mean, I just want to point out the floor plan really quickly because we have to start knocking things off the list. The floor plan of this house where, you know, upstairs, so you entered from a staircase from the front, and that led to the second floor. To on the left was a bedroom that was for the guest, and that's where Abby's body was found. And to the right was Lizzie's bedroom, and that was a bigger room. And then Emma's bedroom, which was her sister, was to the left. And so you had to go through Lizzie's bedroom in order to go to Emma's bedroom. Mm-hmm. So she was like literally living in a closet.
You had to go through Lizzie's to get to Andrew and Abby's too, apparently.
Well, the only way to get to Andrew and Abby's was, yes, according to the floor plan, potentially you could. But the real way was only through the back staircase because Andrew and Abby's door between Lizzie and bedrooms had been the master bedroom, the parents' bedroom, had been nailed shut.
So yes, so I think that living with your parents is definitely one thing we can put on the board. I think another thing we can put on the board is roommate problems because I think that's distinct from living with your parents, because you can have a bad roommate, and that bad roommate could be your parents, it could be your spouse, it could be somebody it could just be somebody you find on Craigslist. But if they leave their shit around, and if they play their music a little too loud, and if they like watching TV at the same time that you do in the living room, that, you know, basically all this stuff can drive you absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And without good communication and proper financing as well, you know, you might be stuck there in those negative situations.
And sure. It doesn't seem like Lizzie had any options, right? As a woman, it's not like she could have just left and got her own home. If it was not common, for a single woman to live alone.
Especially if her father's still alive.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, when you lay out the options, it's either stay or murder. There might have been a few other options in between there.
I hope there are other options.
So I wouldn't say she was optionless.
No.
Maybe she could have been a little more creative with her thinking. But yeah, I would say roommate problems.
Okay.
I don't have anything to add to the board, but one thing I wanted to just say that I found interesting, I read, I think, a similar or maybe the same article from Smithsonian Magazine, but that once this all happened, I guess Fall River, which was growing more and more, the population of immigrants was growing, had like their second ever Irish mayor, and their like town newspaper was all about like how Lizzie did it and how everyone on the Hill was like pouring all this money into, you know, trying to free Lizzie or acquit her from this crime. Whereas like up on the Hill, they had their own, not magazine, newspaper. Uh-huh. And they were all about trying to frame Lizzie as this innocent person who was a victim of, you know, A, B, and C. And I just think it's interesting to put it in today's context. Like, imagine if we had like a really high profile female serial killer or murderer. It's just like, mm-hmm. it's so rare. Yeah. And how interesting that like you would, if you could see like all the wealthy
people rallying behind,
like the liberal elites who are like, you know, and feminists who are like, she's innocent. And then all the,
you could imagine.
The optics were, I don't know, very questionable.
It must have been quite the sensation. Like, what a story for 1892, like Massachusetts. Like,
what about, is there a class? Is there classism at work here?
I think so, because I remember reading that another thing that the, you know, the men of the time thought was that a woman, if she was going to commit a crime, like a murder crime, especially an upper class woman, would have the weapon of choice would have been poison.
Right.
Because they, number one, would have had the means, and that would have been their like customary, or that would have aligned better with, you know, not wanting to get their hands dirty.
Sure. And then you don't have to be, you know, because it doesn't require anything physically from them.
I think that I think that, you know, there's patriarchy, which we already have on there, but is there a difference here between patriarchy and, I mean, I don't know, we also have female oppression, but is it just, can we just put up dumb boys up there? Because the boys, the guys are just dumb about these women. They underestimate them. And
dumb boys making women like pushing them to the brink and then they snap. Like that kind of responsibility.
Underestimating.
I think society run by the boys.
Okay, so we're going to still be in patriarchy land. Yeah. So why don't we just cut that out?
Well, I can keep dumb boys for now. Let's just have you read it at least. Okay.
Do we want to add anything else, or I think we're good?
I'm good. I think right. This is good. Okay, so let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the list.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All Okay, who's to blame for the Lizzie Borden murders? A foreigner. Bridget, the housekeeper.
A.K.A. Maggie.
A.K.A. Maggie. Lizzie Borden. August Heat, the fashion industry. Family inheritance. Dad's penny-pinching ways. The patriarchy. Secret enemy of Andrew Borden. Female oppression. Living with your parents too long. Roommate tension. Classism. Or dumb boys. Dumb boys.
Let's keep dumb boys on. I think we should take the foreigner and Bridget, that housekeeper, off.
Can you imagine if we ended up putting the Portuguese foreigner in jail?
No, there was a sloppily dressed man that walked in front of the house.
He was carrying an axe.
Okay. And then I think, of course, dumb boys really folds into the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree. I think something like Heat, while it is very insufferable, I mean, you're not going to murder someone because of heat. It seems like there was more going on with this family than just a heat wave.
I agree.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. And as well as the fashion industry. Nice try.
We tried to get it in there.
But I just don't think, you know, we can really lock that up.
It seems like she had some good cloth. So she wasn't unhappy with her fashion. True. She probably liked the girdle. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
It was like a symbol. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But if you buy into fashion, it's like, don't you, like, some people are like, I will suffer for fashion because it's worth it. You know, some people say
fashion is pain. Yeah. Or beauty is pain or whatever.
Maybe function or fashion. Like, I have shoes that I wear that are really painful to wear.
And
like,
have you murdered anyone because you're wearing them?
No.
Not yet.
Okay.
Rebecca, are you okay? Send me a signal if you need help. Yeah.
Twice.
Put on some flip-flops. Maybe we can put... I think we can take out living with your parents too long because I don't think she had a choice. And I think many women at the time were living with their parents for way too long. Mm-hmm. If they couldn't... if they didn't marry. And it's more about roommate tension, really.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Secret enemy of Andrew Borden.
That's Lizzie's... story.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
Dad's penny-pinching ways. I mean,
that kind of rolls into living with your parents too long, which kind of rolls into roommate tension. Mm-hmm. To me, it seems more about, well, although, you know, it could just, because then you're talking about the dad, you're talking about the relationship, you're talking about the inheritance. So maybe that gets rolled into inheritance.
That's what I was thinking.
Lizzie wants she wants to turn that faucet up on high. Right now, the faucet's just dripping.
Right.
It is, when you think about inheritance, isn't it so weird? Like, people who are like, okay, I mean, I get it, right?
Yeah, don't even go there, because then you start to think about philanthropy. And you're like, oh, because is this where you're going with this?
What?
Where it's like, well, you have all this money. You're just going to hold on to it until you die.
Right.
Then you're going to give it to me?
Well, and also then it's like, so you're, if you're the person who's going to receive the inheritance, right, you're just waiting for them to, you're waiting for another human to die so that you can get your money.
Just trying to be chill about it. Trying not to be obvious that's what you're doing.
But devil's advocate here, if you're Lizzie and you have a dad who's a penny pincher and you know you're going to get all that money that he's not wanting to spend, you're like, great. Versus your crazy dad who's throwing the money away and you're like, Dad, I got to kill you before you get rid of everything.
That's a fair point. He was a good bank, essentially.
He was also pretty old at the time. He was like 70 years old.
So then I'm taking off family inheritance just based on that amazing point.
I mean, she could have. I don't know how long did people live in 1892?
If
they went past their teens, they were basically.
But you know what could have been was that she was scared that he was going to leave it to Abby. If he died first left it to Abby, there would have been issues.
But wait, wouldn't that mean? So
because if Abby could have redistributed it. You know,
right, but then why was she old too?
She was like 63, which is pretty old for the time.
Abby, right.
You know?
Yeah.
That's just a lack of patience. That's on Lizzie. You got to be patient for this stuff.
It's just so weird. It's like...
It is
very strange.
But
I think the what if it's not inheritance, then it's actually the penny pinching. Because if he had been more loose with the money, maybe she wouldn't have wanted that in, you know, been so in such a rush for the inheritance.
Right.
What came first?
I don't know. To me, like what it speaks to more is Lizzie herself and the impatience there. I mean, if she's the one who did this, I mean, which
I mean,
how much
seems like she was.
I don't know. There's not, again, only circumstantial evidence, but again, it's 1892. I don't know what else you go with.
I mean, it's like, what are we deciding here? Who's responsible for the murders?
Seems yes.
Like Lizzie Borden is responsible for the murders. Like, just
I don't know,
right?
Clayton. What about the patriarchy? Could be the patriarchy.
Yes.
Female
but like,
oppression.
Why did she do those things? Right. Mm-hmm. And like of the things we have left on the board, patriarchy, female oppression, roommate tension, and classism. I think classism can probably come off.
Yeah, it is part of it. She felt like she was being portrayed as lower class or being seen as lower because she lives on Second Street, apparently. That shithole of Second Street.
Oh, man.
Okay, again, we've got Lizzie herself, the patriarchy, female oppression, and roommate tension. We can, I think we fold female oppression into the patriarchy, right? Am I
sure.
Wrong
sure.
here?
I would say that go the other way because patriarch female tension is a specific tenet of the patriarchy writ large, and it's I think more to you know if you can.
Is it though?
Isn't it?
Isn't that the whole thing?
What?
What can we get a definition of the patriarchy? I know because sometimes I'm like, do we really know what we're taught? Like what words mean? Because in my mind...
The answer to that, you don't want to know the answer to that.
Oh, jeez. Why?
The definition of... No, I was just joking. Oh. the definition of a patriarch is a system of society or government in which the father or eldest male is head of the family and descent is traced through the male line. So we're talking... We're using that as a...
That's female oppression.
I feel like when people reference the patriarchy... In a much more derogative manner, it's more about like male dominance and
right. Well, that's what I'm saying is that like I think it's used commonly today to mean a lot of different things.
Okay.
Because the truth about words is that you can just take them and just kind of use them to you can use them however.
Yeah,
the
they
hell
can
you
mean
want.
Whatever they want these days.
These days, so
they don't have to be
that's,
true.
That's sort of where I was going, which is that
okay.
Female oppression to me is a bit more of a specific.
Tool
version.
That the patriarchy uses.
Okay.
And it has to do with her limited options of the age where she's at because she's a woman and also the lower sort of expectations of her and what her roles
I understand
sort of,
what you're saying.
Sort of forced into being.
But if she didn't live in a society where inheritance and power was traced or handed down through the male people
well,
in her
she,
in
she
her family
she doesn't
then
that's not true that's not true
what do you
of,
mean?
Of the society I mean it's common it could be common practice but it's not I mean you know he's gonna have to leave his money to someone it was gonna go to his
I
daughters
guess that's true
you know this isn't
that's
it's
true.
You know it's not like a king who you know it goes to the male heir.
I hear what you're saying. Let's take the patriarchy off for this one. And really, we got to decide between these three. Lizzie Borden, female oppression, and roommate tensions.
It's funny
I feel like
me.
I...
Go
like,
ahead.
Yeah.
No, I feel like I... One of these... it sounds almost like slapstick when you read it out loud. I'm guessing you can guess
Lizzie Borden, right?
Yeah. Why would we blame her? One of these, I mean, although I understand the dynamics, it's like, it feels like one of these things is not like the other.
Right, right. So I think I hear what you're saying, Clayton. You want to send roommate tension to the alarmist jail.
No!
But I'm going to go against it. And I think that, you know, Lizzie Borden should probably be sent to the alarmist jail. I know, or female oppression. I mean, it's a hard one. It's like I hear the argument for female oppression. I do.
Mm-hmm.
But again, murdering is a different level, right?
Right.
And
it seems like she got off the hook for this in life.
Yeah.
So it seems like justice to throw her in the alarmist jail in this podcast.
That makes sense to me.
Right, right. Okay. So I'm going to call it. Lizzie Borden, you're going to the alarmist jail. Female oppression, you're getting slapped so hard.
Nice.
Ouch.
Don't oppress. Don't oppress.
Yeah. Impress. Don't oppress.
There you go. Come on.
Well, I mean, for once, we did put a suspected killer in the alarmist jail.
You know, sometimes you just, keep it simple, stupid. The kiss method. Keep it simple.
Although, no hard evidence, but okay, sure. Lizzie's going to jail.
It's true. It's a good point, actually.
I mean, okay, well, this is a nightmare for me. False imprisonment is a nightmare.
That is a nightmare.
Yeah. But okay, we're
if one of the alarmy starts a defense organization for falsely imprisoned alarmist jail people.
Yeah.
That could be a fun spinoff.
Oh, geez. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, we'll have to talk to an expert about this because if she didn't commit the crime, we don't have enough evidence, we might have to take her out, but we'll see. We'll see. Okay. Well, thanks again to us for being here as our own guests.
We're welcome.
You're welcome.
And that's that. See you next time.
After the murders on August 11th, 1892, Lizzie Borden was arrested for the murders of her father and stepmother. 10 months later, she went on trial in New Bedford. The jury waited for what they perceived to be a decent interval, just over an hour, before acquitting her. 2 months after the innocent verdict, Lizzie and Emma moved to a large Victorian house on the hill. 4 years after her acquittal, a warrant was issued for her arrest in Providence. She was charged with shoplifting and apparently made restitution. In 1905, Emma moved out of the house and evidently the sisters never saw each other again. Both died in 1927, Lizzie first and then Emma 9 days later.
Vote for who you think is to blame by going to thealarmistpodcast.com. Follow us at thealarmistthe on Twitter, at thealarmistpodcast on Instagram, or email us at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Halloween poison candy hysteria that swept the nation.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.